The hour have arrived. We will call the order of the Board of Trustees, Academic Affairs, Student Affairs, and Personnel Committee. I want to welcome you here for a very informative session we're going to have this morning. Ms. Parrish, would you please call the roll?
Good morning. Trustee Rita Athas?
Here.
Trustee John Butler? Trustee Montel Gales?
Here.
Trustee Veronica Herrero? Trustee Madeline Mershon?
Here.
Trustee Eric Wasowitz?
Here.
Board Chair Dennis Barsima?
Here.
Committee Chair Robert Pritchard?
Here. Mr. Perry, would you please verify that we have a quorum and that the appropriate notice of this meeting has been posted?
Good morning, Mr. Chair. The appropriate notice has been provided pursuant to the Illinois Open Meetings Act, and you do have a quorum for today's meeting.
Very good. Well, let us turn now to Board Chair Mr. Barsima to administer the oath to the student trustee, Madeline Mershon.
Raise your right hand. I state your name.
I, Madeline Mershon.
Do solemnly swear that I will faithfully serve.
Do solemnly swear that I will faithfully serve.
Support, preserve, protect, and defend.
Support, preserve, protect, and defend.
The Constitution of the United States.
The Constitution of the United States.
And the laws thereof.
And the laws thereof.
The Constitution of the State of Illinois.
The Constitution of the State of Illinois.
And the laws thereof.
And the laws thereof.
And the Constitution, bylaws, and policies of Northern Illinois University.
And the Constitution, bylaws, policies of Northern Illinois University.
And I acknowledge the fiduciary responsibility.
And I acknowledge the fiduciary responsibility.
That each member of the Board of Trustees has.
That each member of the Board of Trustees has.
And further solemnly swear.
And further solemnly swear.
That I will discharge faithfully.
That I will discharge faithfully.
My duties as a member of the Board of Trustees.
My duties as the member of a Board of Trustees.
Of Northern Illinois University to the best of my ability.
Of Northern Illinois University to the best of my ability.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
She's going to go gather her comments. I also, before you make your comments, will present you with the pin that identifies you as a member of the Board of Trustees of NIU.
Thank you.
Again, congratulations and comments. Get off the boat. You want that? That's yours.
Hello, everyone. This is the beginning of my final chapter as an undergraduate at NIU. In a few short weeks, I will be attending my last homecoming football game as an undergrad. In a few short months, I will be taking my last Christmas break as an undergrad. And in just under a year, I will be walking across the stage, proudly accepting my undergraduate degree. I couldn't think of a better way to start this chapter than by being here with you all today as the 2019-2020 student trustee. When I turn the last page of this undergraduate career, I want to do so knowing I have made a difference. I want to do so knowing I helped make this university a better place for the Huskies that come after me. It is with great pleasure that I serve this university. Thank you, and as always, go Dogs.
Welcome. We're glad to have you as a part of the board. May I have a motion to approve the agenda for today's meeting?
So moved.
Second.
Moved and seconded. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? And the secretary will note that Trustee Herrera has joined us at this time. Welcome. May I have a motion to approve the minutes of the meeting of our May 19th gathering?
So moved.
And moved. Is there a second?
Second.
Any comments? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried. I'd certainly like to welcome everyone to today's discussion. We have an active agenda with the NIU delegation reporting on their visit to Southeast Asia, an overview of the College of Health and Human Sciences from Dean Daryl Block, the university reports on oral English proficiency and the faculty emeritus recognition, and two approval items, not 22 as we had last meeting, a new certificate of graduate study of FinTech, and a recommendation for faculty tenure and promotion. Before we get into the agenda, I'd like to recognize the university advisory liaisons for academic affairs, student affairs, and personnel, and welcome in a new capacity Kendall Thu as faculty senate president, newly elected president of the operating staff, Jeffrey Royce, supportive professional staff, Kathy Doderline, Professor Alex Gelman, Professor Jason Hanna, and Professor Sarah Marsh. Do you have any comments for the group this morning?
Thank you, Trustee Pritchard, and thank you, President Freeman, fellow board members and colleagues. I do have a brief set of remarks, but I'm going to hold off until the full board meeting. Otherwise, I'm going to irritate you four times over through all the meeting. But good morning to everybody.
Good morning, and now everyone's waiting with bated breath for what Kendall's going to say later. It is exciting. Good morning, and as we say in my family this time of year, Happy New Year. With the new school year starting, it's always an exciting time as we start to welcome our students back to campus. I also would like to welcome officially into his role as Faculty Senate President, Dr. Kendall Thu, and then also my colleague Jeffrey Royce serving as the Operating Staff Council President. And also want to thank Ian Pearson from the Student Association Senator, for his efforts in reaching out to our shared governance bodies, and look forward to working with him and Naomi Bolden in the coming year, as well as welcome Madeline Mershon into her role as student trustee. It is indeed an exciting time of year, and it's also a time when we're wrapping up a busy summer for many of our students, faculty, and staff. In my day job in career services, I have the opportunity to witness a lot of incredible internship experiences that our students have, including having spent last week Friday at John Deere hearing from accountancy and finance interns, and I was excited to see that we were the most represented university in attendance in terms of interns represented who were giving their presentations, with the exception of one rather large state institution in a southerly direction. But otherwise, we were beating out the pack, and the four students that represented us there did a great job. And I know that their experiences are not unlike many of the other experiences our students have, including in our College of Health and Human Sciences, who you'll be hearing more about later today, their efforts in the classroom and in research and in internships is very well represented all throughout the state and country, and I'm sure you'll hear more about that later today. But just very, very much looking forward to the coming year, and thank you again for the opportunity to speak today and just be a part of this process. Thank you.
Good morning. I had not pre-prepared any comments for this, so I think I'm going to follow Kendall Thu's lead and keep a low profile until the full board meeting, but thank you for the gracious welcome.
Since Kendall chose not to, quote, irritate you with his comments this time around, I will gratefully into the breach. I'd like to applaud the seemingly new policy that's now in effect of having colleges present their accomplishments, descriptions of what they do today. I look forward to Dean Block's presentation. With everything that goes on and everything that is at the fingertips of the board, it's sometimes easy to lose track of what we're actually here for. And that's not an accusation, that's a commiseration. And making that be part of the agenda and a regular policy of presenting on what our academic units are doing to fulfill our mission and to move the ball forward is a welcome addition to our work, and I applaud you for making that choice. Irritation complete.
Well, Thank you very much for your comments. Mr. Perry, are any members of the public registered to address the board in accordance with state and Board of Trustee bylaws?
Mr. Chair, the university received one timely request, but I do not believe that person is present. Mr. James Krause, he's not.
Okay, thank you. Let's move into university reports, and since Executive Vice President and Provost Beth Fisher Ingram is traveling, I'd like to ask Vice President of Enrollment, Management, Marketing, and Communication, Saul Jensen, to present the university report and recommendations.
Thank you, Committee Chair Pritchard and members of the board. Also, would like to welcome new trustee, Mershon. Looking forward to working with you this year. Our first item of business, or our university report, which is agenda item 8A, is an information item. And so I'm pleased to hear from President Freeman, as she'll provide information about the itinerary and outcomes that were associated with an NIU delegation that visited Southeast Asia this past summer to expand partnerships and engage alumni.
Good morning, everybody. It's really a pleasure to address the audience about the NIU delegation to Southeast Asia. This is a much more fun topic than I often get to present to the board at meetings. And following on Kathy Doderline's comments, just as many of our students use the summer to engage deeply in research, artistry, civic engagement activities, and advance the university's mission and vision of being an engine of creativity and innovation and social mobility, many of our faculty are similarly engaged over the summer. And I think that this is just a great example, snapshot of the power of NIU, both at home and abroad. So we had people from the faculty and from the NIU senior leadership, particularly representing the programs that you see on this slide, the Center for Southeast Asian Studies, the Center for Burma-Myanmar Studies, and Educate Global. And I'm going to say a little bit about each one of these centers or programs, and after that I'm actually going to ask the members of the delegation who are here with us today to walk over to the microphone near Vice President Blasey and or near Kendall and introduce themselves. You can see from the picture that Vice President Blasey and I were joined by Eric Jones, and we will be looking at many pictures from this trip. But first, a little bit about our engagement in Southeast Asia and the centers that are fixtures and points of pride for NIU. Our Center for Southeast Asian Studies is 50 years old. It grew out of one of the first Peace Corps training programs for Southeast Asian volunteers. It's been designated as a U.S. State Department or U.S. Department of Education Title VI National Resource Center, and it's had that designation since 1997. Many of us probably don't know what that means. It means that our center can offer scholarships and undergraduate and graduate programs and funding for community outreach and training and faculty support. The center also actively partners with the State Department and other government departments, international entities, and organizations for youth leadership development programs. And when we talk about being a Title VI National Resource Center, there are only six of them, and I want to just mention to you who the other five are, because this is pretty impressive. The other Title VI centers for Southeast Asia are Cornell, UCLA, Michigan, Wisconsin-Madison, and Berkeley. And I can attest from our trip that when you talk to our alums of any of our programs in Southeast Asia, those are the six universities they know, and they know NIU best. In addition, the Center for Southeast Asian Studies offers language training in Burmese, Indonesian, Khmer, which is Cambodian, Tagalog, and Thai, research in a variety of disciplines, cultural and networking activities, and study abroad opportunities for our students in Southeast Asia, exchange opportunities for language scholars, both students and faculty. Our Center for Burma Studies is 30 years old, not quite as old as the Center for Southeast Asian Studies, but it's been with us a jewel in our crown for a long time. A major objective of this center, which is not a political center, is to collect and preserve information, articles, artifacts of all kinds related to the peoples and cultures of Burma, Myanmar, and to make these materials broadly available for research and study. We have a unique relationship with the Burma Studies Foundation and a very impressive art collection, which is often the foundation for our scholarship and engagement activities. Educate Global is an opportunity that the College of Education provides to students, an opportunity for hands-on multicultural teaching through partnerships with international school districts. It gives our students an opportunity to spread their wings, to work with international colleagues, and to distinguish themselves from their peers, and to see the power of engaging others in a completely different culture. And for students who select Educate Global, in addition to a transcript notation, their experience includes round-trip airfare and room and board. So it's something that we can make accessible and affordable to our future teachers. NIU is very proud of these programs. Before I go on and talk more about our trip, I see that we have the center directors, an associate director, the dean of the College of Education with us, as well as Jerry Blasey. So if you all could please walk over to the microphone and just say a little bit about yourselves, that would be great. Yes, we also have the dean of Liberal Arts and Sciences and former director of Southeast Asian Studies with us.
Hi, I'm Eric Jones. I'm the acting director of the Center for Southeast Asian Studies.
I'm Catherine Raymond, director of the Center for Burma Studies.
Lori Ellish Piper, dean of the College of Education.
I'm Judy Ledgerwood, acting dean of the College of Liberal Arts and Sciences and the former director of the Center for Southeast Asian Studies.
Good morning, I'm Carmine Bruschelli, and I am the program coordinator at the Center for Burma Studies.
And I'm Jerry Blasey, the Vice President for Research and Innovation Partnerships, and I'd like to take the opportunity for thanking my colleagues for gently introducing me to Southeast Asia.
So where did we go? All of us flew into Bangkok, and then we used regional airlines to connect first to Myanmar, then to Thailand, then to Laos, and then to Indonesia. Not everyone in the delegation attended every aspect of the trip, but NIU was well represented in each of the countries where we have differing levels of engagement. Before I move on and start talking about our time in Myanmar, I want to mention that all of us connected through Bangkok on regional airlines, but my suitcase went to Beijing, and I will be eternally grateful to Carmine for negotiating its return with three airlines in four languages. So thank you, Carmine. Our first stop was Myanmar, where we have been engaged even before the country opened after President Obama's in 2012 because of Professor Raymond's deep ties. This was the longest leg of the trip, and as you can see from the pictures, we spent time affirming established partnerships in formal ceremonies, discussing new opportunities for research, and taking advantage of cultural and alumni engagement opportunities. I'm going to show you our full itinerary on the next slide, but as I thought about what to say today, it became really clear to me that I wanted you to understand how well NIU was represented around Southeast Asia, and I thought that I would just kind of hit a highlight moment from each trip. So before I show you our full itinerary, I want to point out this picture. We have a Fulbright language fellow, Arkar, here. Here's Eric Jones wearing the traditional dress that was gifted to us by one of the universities. You will notice Jerry Blasey is not in the picture. He was gifted the traditional dress, but as he just mentioned, he was introduced to Southeast Asia gently. But what I really want to talk about is Arkar, who was known on our campus as David, and Ye Pie, who was known on our campus as Eric. Eric was an alum of the College of Business. He got a bachelor's in business administration with certificates in social entrepreneurship and civic engagement, and calls Dennis his mentor. While we were there, meeting with these two young alums, emerging leaders who have Husky ties, they were notified that they got a State Department grant for about $20,000 to run a program in Myanmar. And I just want to read you the one paragraph from the executive summary, because if this doesn't say NIU in Myanmar, I don't know what does. International Exchange alumni of the U.S. Department of State and Taxila Institute from Myanmar, Burma, will conduct educational leadership and classroom management project in 5 border states. Supervised by our advisory board, comprised of the dean and professors across Northern Illinois University's College of Education, College of Business, College of Liberal Arts and Sciences, Center for Southeast Asian Studies, and Center for Burma Studies, our project focuses on the theme of promoting inclusion and educational opportunity in order to aspire to teachers from 18 universities. NIU has taken its mission of social justice, of equality in education, of empowering others, of civic engagement and social entrepreneurship to Myanmar by empowering these 2 young men who will be a credit to us for a long, long time. So if you look at our entire agenda, you can see that we visited many universities to strengthen ties. We engaged with alumni of our youth leadership programs as well as our degree programs. We met with alumni Huskies who are now in leadership positions in government and non-government organizations, schools. And then we visited some of the incredible cultural sites that the country has to offer on the cultural tours, often accompanied by faculty who work with our faculty. I was there in 2013, right after President Obama, with many of the people who were on, right after President Obama's visit, along with many of the faculty who were on this trip. And you can see the country changing, you can see Huskies emerging as leaders, and you can see the faculty connections that we made in 2013 really starting to bear fruit. Many of the faculty that we initially connected with were at the more regional universities like Yanarabon, but they have now moved to the flagships, to Yangon and to Mandalay. And in fact, as a result of a conversation that we had at Yangon University in July, we now have a Fulbright scholar coming this fall to work on water purity along with Melissa Lichtensky from the Environmental Institute. So if Myanmar was really about visiting with Huskies who are emerging leaders, Thailand was really about visiting with Huskies who are established leaders and, again, reinforcing relationships with universities that we had and forging a new relationship. Thammasat University is a premier institution in Thailand, and we went there to sign an agreement that established dual degree program in economics, political science, and not-for-profit and NGO studies. This will pave the way for more Thai undergraduates to come to NIU. And just 2 weeks after we all returned from Southeast Asia, we had a delegation from Thammasat here signing a combined bachelor's master's program with public administration with our School of Global and Public Affairs and Political Science. When we met with the alumni in Thailand, you could see that they were, in fact, at the very top levels of non-government organizations, of the Thai government, and of the universities. And that's because we have a very long history in Thailand with very distinguished faculty, particularly in political science and anthropology. So for those of us who have been at NIU for a long time, you may remember our Thai specialists, Ladd Thomas, Clark Nair, Danny Unger in political science, Andrea Molnar in anthropology. There are others that I won't name. But the Thai military attaché who's coming to Washington, D.C. at the end of this month is an alum of ours. 2 of the top advisors to the Thai leader are alums of ours. Major university heads are alums of ours. And this is amazing to experience when you're there, and it's an important asset to the university. The other really interesting thing that I learned while we were in Thailand is that every one of our Thai alums follows Mission the Mascot on social media voraciously. So. The last country that I was in, the third country that the delegation visited, was Laos. And here, we had some people leave. Dr. Blasey actually departed before a lot of the, after the Thai visits, but before the Lao visits. But we had our colleagues from the College of Education, Dean Lori Ellis-Piper, and then also Terry Borg, who is the supportive professional staff member attached to many of the global programs, join us for Laos. Here, we were really invited by the embassy because of Dr. Eric Jones' very excellent relationship with the embassy's public affairs officer and with the ambassador. And as a result, we were able to attend the 4th of July party hosted by the embassy, as well as do some sightseeing. We visited with universities on visits that the embassy arranged, and we experienced a very traditional Buddhist ceremony to welcome us to the capital, Vientiane. Here you can see our Laos itinerary. And we really spent a lot of their time there meeting with educators, and educators across basically the P20 spectrum, because a real priority is furthering English language development at all levels. And I want to say that one of my favorite moments of this trip was a moment that we had when the embassy had arranged a meeting for us with a bunch of Lao educators. And we were going around the table and talking about what was important to us. And one of the younger Lao teachers, very humble, eyes down, said, "We have students in our school who speak 40 languages and dialects at home, and they don't have English at home, and we don't really know how to teach them English." And she was obviously presenting this as something that she took as a personal shortcoming. And Lori Ellis-Piper just, you know, with her smile and her positive attitude, said, "In Elgin, Illinois, 30 miles from NIU, we have schools where 30 different dialects of Lao are spoken at home, and English isn't the primary language. And we're training teachers to go into those schools, and you can help us train them, and we can help you." And in that moment, there was a smile, and there was a radiance, and NIU. So speaking of Elgin, which Lori actually did mention on the trip, it's interesting. We have 10,000 people of Laotian heritage who live in the Elgin area. They're a diaspora community, but in 2017, they reconnected as a sister city to the Lao capital, Vientiane. This represents, obviously for us, an opportunity to make some domestic connections related to recruitment and enrollment, as well as some international ones. I also want to point out that on this trip, if you read the NIU Today story that's on your desks, we were able to present a scholarship to one of the young Lao women who was part of our youth leadership program so that she can come and attend NIU as an undergraduate. And just look at the t-shirt that she's wearing in that picture. She had that t-shirt made because she loves NIU and she loves being a Husky. I don't have as much to say about Indonesia because I wasn't there, but when we move to the discussion section, I'm sure that my colleagues who were would be delighted to talk about what went on. As you can see, it was the same type of agenda. There was cultural engagement, there was alumni engagement, and there were opportunities to forge new agreements and explore new research and scholarship opportunities with universities that we have there. There was also an opportunity to notify one of the distinguished alums of the College of Liberal Arts and Sciences that that award would be presented in October. And there was an opportunity again for Educate Global in West Sumatra, Indonesia. I flipped through these pretty quickly. But I think if you go back and you look at the copies of the PowerPoint that you have received, you can just get a sense of the energy, the smiles, the Husky pride from both our delegation and from everyone that we interacted with. And so as we think about what the future opportunities are for us here, I want to just say that this is a real opportunity to build on a 50-year-old foundation, to strengthen our international reputation in a region where we are thought of in the same breath as Cornell and Berkeley and Michigan and Madison. We have an opportunity to more formally engage our alumni, and this is an opportunity to do it in a regional way, and we've already been having discussions about what that might look like, what we might do next year in Bangkok to create an annual opportunity for alums to come together. I also want to say that we talk about our mission as involving teaching and learning and research scholarship and artistry and outreach and engagement. And very often we focus on the teaching and learning and the research scholarship and artistry, and we don't have as many tangible examples of engagement where it's a real reciprocal relationship. What I saw on this trip, and what anyone who works with faculty like Catherine Raymond or Judy Ledgerwood or Eric Jones would see, is that they take all three aspects of our mission and add them together, 1 + 1 + 1, to equal more than 3, 4, 5, or 10. Because there are students engaged from both countries in the scholarly work, in the outreach work. We're making faculty relationships. We're making agreements that promote enrollment. But we're also helping our students, students there, our faculty and faculty there, see things through a new lens to create and integrate new knowledge to advance Southeast Asian culture and advance global competency on our campus. And I think we should highlight these opportunities as much as we possibly can. So I think going forward, we'll continue to have our Southeast Asian relationships as something that we're very, very proud of and something that we act upon when we think about succession planning in the centers, faculty hiring across disciplines, and growing enrollment through strategic partnerships. And at this point, I invite the board to ask me questions, but also to ask any member of the delegation questions.
Do board members have questions?
I just have a comment that I think this was like about 6 months ago. I was having lunch with a business guy in Chicago, and he informed me about how NIU is the leader in this area, and I felt a little bit ashamed that I didn't know this. So I wish I had seen this presentation 6 months ago. And we truly are a leader. His wife has been here many times to do studies, has written a book as well, and I'm just blown away by what we're doing in this area. So this is awesome.
And I do encourage the board to look at the websites for these centers. There's a lot more information there. There are a lot more pictures and videos there because this is something that this is one of the things that we are really internationally recognized for, and we just need to make sure that everyone is aware of that. We don't want this or NIU to be a well-kept secret any longer.
Dennis, go ahead.
I would also make the comment, too, and I know you alluded to it, Dr. Freeman, but this is a great opportunity for us to understand the communities that exist within not just the geographic range of NIU like Elgin, but to also bring students from their home country over here from an international student standpoint. This is a great connection to make from a recruitment standpoint for future Huskies here on our campus. So encourage us to really explore all opportunities to continue to make this a focus in terms of student recruitment.
Well, and absolutely, I'll just say to credit the National Resource Center and the language training aspects of the centers, we met our students who were there in country for the summer working on their language skills, and I think we all know, and I'm sure Maddie would agree with this, that the best recruiters for NIU are our current students who are enjoying those transformative experiences, and so the fact that we have federal funds to support student exchange and to send our students who are having these magnificent experiences there to talk about being a Husky, it's a tremendous value add to the university, and we very much appreciate it.
Well, and just as you noted, I mean, we tend to look at so many different barriers as to why students can't come to a four-year institution, be it economic, be it gender, race, whatever it might be, but we kind of tend to forget language, as being one of those. And so I think anything we can do and continue to do to knock that barrier down so that language never becomes a reason why somebody can't go on and continue their education at an institution like ours would be great.
Absolutely, and you know, cost can be a barrier for the Southeast Asian students, but just as our NIU faculty and administrators are very creative working with domestic community colleges, some of the degree programs that we were there to establish and celebrate have that same type of seamless pathway, guided pathway aspect to bring Southeast Asian students here. So the innovation of our faculty is really going to make a difference. And let's hope that this just continues to grow and prosper. I just want to say thank you to everyone in the delegation because I had a wonderful time, as I think you could probably tell from my presentation.
The only last thing I would say is that having been to that part of the world before during June and July, you might want to pick a different time of the year to go next time.
I think you can see the perspiration and the hair issues that we all suffered during that.
Thank you. Well, congratulations to the delegates for having a wonderful experience, and we hope you can share that with our institution and multiply these efforts again. Thank you.
All right, moving to agenda item 9A, the request for a new certificate of graduate study in FinTech. The university proposes a certificate of graduate study in FinTech offered by the Department of Finance within the College of Business. Over the past few years, FinTech has emerged as a powerful theme, driven by the rapid adoption of cutting-edge technologies across the financial services industry, such as digital payments and money transfers, financial software and automation, and alternative lending and funding platforms. In addition to focusing on the emerging technologies, the certificate includes courses in financial modeling, computer programming, and data analytics and visualization. Employers for students with skill sets in this area include banks, consulting firms, financial technology, and investment firms. Job growth and investment in this field is booming, and other leading institutions such as Cornell, Harvard, and NYU have already created FinTech certificates. University of Illinois also currently offers a FinTech track in their Master's of Science in Finance program. And currently about one-third of the fall 2019 NIU Master of Science Finance student body has indicated an interest in pursuing the FinTech certificate without even advertising the program. So the university recommends that the Academic Affairs, Student Affairs, and Personnel Committee endorse this request and asks that the president forward it by means of the president's report to the Board of Trustees for approval at its meeting on September 12, 2019.
Very good. Is there a motion?
I move that we approve this.
Is there a second?
Second.
Further discussion?
I have a question. So I'm in support of this, but I'm just curious as to why did this come forward? Was this the request of students that we continue to hear of business professionals who are going to be in our graduate program that we hear? What was the stimulus that brought this idea forward?
Dr. Gina Nicolosi and Dean Rajagopalan are here. I invite either one of you to take the microphone.
I'll begin and then Dr. Nicolosi can add to it. We had, some of you may know that we had a master's in financial risk management in Chicago. And one of the things that we were looking at is what the market is telling us about the future of the financial services industry. And we completely redesigned the financial risk management program to be a master of science in finance with concentrations in fintech, well, not concentration, a graduate certificate in fintech, to be at the leading edge of what the changes that are happening in the marketplace, are informing us about. So with that change, the Master of Science in Finance is now offered here on our campus in DeKalb with the graduate certificate as an add-on for those that are interested in that track. The certificate in risk management is also available for students, so it is now providing two pathways for that. So the impetus was certainly the data from the market telling us about where the industry is going, but also offered us an opportunity to completely redesign the program.
So I noticed that we're not going to create any new courses, at least according to the rationale. we're not going to create any new courses. We're going to take existing courses and combine them together in a certificate. So if I'm a master's degree student or candidate, am I doing this because it's going to help me get a job in fintech? Am I doing it because I'm going to put it on my resume that I have a certificate in fintech? What, from the student's lens, why is this going to be of interest to me?
I'm going to answer your question in just a second. I want to add on to Balaji's response. So what he didn't say very humbly is that he was actually the one that said, hey, fintech is a really popular, sexy term right now. Maybe that should be something that you incorporate into your program. And so I went to the marketplace. Our alum, including someone who is an entrepreneur in the Chicagoland area, in the fintech space, and I asked him and then others for what types of courses, what things should we include in that. And so I got a lot of very helpful feedback, and some of them are on the advisory council as well. Now, true, we are creating no new courses right now because we wanted to first see if there is a need for, you know, a demand for it, and we didn't want to cost any money. So we are very nicely and generously, the counterparts are being very generous and letting us use some of their existing courses, but we are developing some of our own courses based on the demand. So when I say that, I'm specifically this year, we're going to do a fintech capstone, and we are using it in the MBA program too. So this certificate is not solely for MSF, Masters of Finance students. It can be for MBA students. It can be for non-degree seeking students, because you can just come in and take those four classes. Why are the students taking the classes? Well, because they see all the time in the news, you know, fintech being blared everywhere. And also the department has been pushing technology a lot, so we are already mandating that our finance undergrads do a modicum amount of computer programming. So they're seeing the value of technology integrated with their current financial discipline. And the employers are asking for these, so it seems an easy, you know, low-hanging fruit to do.
What's an example of a class that you might create for a fintech certificate?
Sure. So in addition to the capstone, which deals with things like blockchain, of course, AI, deep learning, bots, those types of regulation, privacy concerns that we're seeing all the time in the media as well. So in addition to that one, which we are starting out this winter session in an online format, and like I said, MBA students are already biting, chomping at the bit to get into it. Going down the line, we've had one faculty leave for another institution, so we're taking that opportunity, again, not costing the university any money because we'd have to rehire to meet our demand now, but we're looking for some fintech specialization in that area. What I'm hoping is specifically in the programming area, Nick Koronis and Daniel, the advisor, the chair and the advisor for computer science, they've been absolutely fabulous. But there's a huge demand for computer science already, so it's kind of hard to get into their graduate level classes. So it would be really good, and some feedback from our current MSF students would be to have programming, but from a financial angle too. Not just the standard algorithms that you have to type out that you do in any language that you learn, right? Guessing games and that kind of things. But can we apply it to financial data solely so they can see the value more easily?
How do we compare with other universities? Are we ahead of the game? Are we sort of behind a little bit in incorporating fintech into our finance and MBA programs?
I would love to say that we're ahead of the game, but no.
It's time.
As Sol mentioned, the big universities, NYU, Cornell, they have these online certificates available. And in preparation for teaching these courses, or at least being knowledgeable, so to answer questions, our faculty are enrolled in these courses right now, or these certificate programs right now. The only one close to us, as he mentioned, is University of Illinois.
How many of these classes are going to be online versus regular?
So as you know, there's a big push, right, to put our programs online. So this winter session, one of the four courses will be offered online. And the idea is that that will continue. Then the very first course in the FinTech certificate is a financial modeling course, which is actually a required course for the Master's of Finance program, and is hopefully going to be a required course for our undergraduate program too, at least, you know, a cross-listed version of it. The idea is that would be offered online, maybe in a hybrid format sometime this year. And then once we, if there is demand and we develop the additional two courses, right now, remember, they're being offered by outside mark or programs. So I can't put those online, but if there is demand, we want to in-house those, and then we have control over whether or not to put them online too.
Other questions?
First of all, I applaud you for talking with Nick Koronis. I mean, I think that's awesome. I mean, I remember when I was teaching a few years back, and Nick actually came into Barsema Hall, and he was wondering at the building because he'd never been in there before. So I'm glad to see that we're collaborating. Curious about some of the programming that's going on there. Are you looking at Python then? Is that what you'll be teaching?
So our undergraduates they have to learn an intro to Python, an intro to R, and then at their senior level, they, depending on what specialization they move into, there's different more advanced courses that they can do. But when I say courses, these are modules that we include, in our 400 level courses. Our master's students, we expect them, and they on their own time can do those intro to R, intro to Python, such that they can come in and be able to do the more advanced applications. But yes, R and Python for sure. I believe we have a new professor teaching the data modeling or financial modeling this semester. I think he might also incorporate a little bit of SAS, because it's fantastic for huge data as well. But that's all there is right now in there.
Good. Thank you.
Bob, can I add something?
Madam President?
Since our provost isn't here, I might just add something that I think she would say, and that is, I want to just remind the board that a certificate program is a tool for our faculty to use for curricular innovation, to modernize our curricula, to start to create courses that meet contemporary need and do it in a way that allow those curricula to be developed and tested over time. So when we create a new course for a certificate, whether it's in FinTech or anything else, in general, that certificate course, that new course, is also almost immediately available as an elective in other programs, and over time starts to inform the content of courses that are looking to be made more contemporary in degree programs. And we do, as Trustee Herrera knows, always try to make our certificates as stackable as possible into credentials so that they can be the gate into a graduate degree program.
Trustee Marchand.
So currently, there are four classes that you're going to be currently using to make the FinTech certificate. When you design the two additional courses, will it be adding on to those four courses or replacing two of the courses?
It would be replacing the courses. Okay. Just again, because right now we have to rely on the kindness of not strangers, but others, you know, to get our students into those courses. And so we would like to be able to have a little bit more control. But again, we want to test the waters first to make sure that there is demand enough to make sure that that's a fiscally responsible decision.
If there are no further questions, would the clerk please call the roll?
Trustee Rita Athas?
Yes.
Trustee Montel Gills?
Yes.
Trustee Veronica Herrero?
Yes.
Trustee Madeline Marchand?
Yes.
Trustee Eric Wasowitz?
Yes.
Board Chair Dennis Barsema?
Yes.
Committee Chair Robert Pritchard?
Yes. Motion passes successfully.
Agenda item 9B, recommendations for faculty tenure and or promotion. The Board of Trustees approved a number of recommendations for tenure and promotion at the June meeting. There were some late hires that occurred this summer that resulted in faculty being hired with tenure. And these two individuals listed are recommended for tenure at this meeting. It is important to note that in determining qualifications for hiring with tenure, the faculty members' credentials are fully vetted by the department chair and personnel committee, as well as the dean and the college council. The university recommends that the Academic Affairs, Student Affairs, and Personnel Committee endorse this request and that the president forward it by means of the president's report to the Board of Trustees for approval at their meeting on August 15, 2019.
Is there a motion for this approval?
So moved.
Is there a second?
Second.
Further questions, discussion? I would just like to welcome and congratulate some terrific new hires that are reflected in these promotions with the Health and Human Sciences Associate Dean for Academic Affairs, and not yet with us is the Chair of Nursing, which was a very difficult position to fill, with Susan Kaplan joining us at a later date. I will just note that our board policy indicates that faculty tenure and promotion items need a roll call vote, and that our student trustee is not allowed to vote on this particular issue. So, Madam Secretary, if there are no questions, would you please proceed with the roll call?
Trustee Rita Athas?
Yes.
Trustee John Bubber, sorry. Trustee Montel Gales?
I'll say yes as well.
Trustee Veronica Herrero?
Yes.
Trustee Madeline Mershon?
Abstained.
Trustee Eric Wesowitz?
Yes.
Board Chair Dennis Barcima?
Yes.
Committee Chair Robert Pritchard?
Yes. The motion carried. Congratulations.
Could I just ask a quick, do we have those two associate professors here?
Dr. Kushner.
Oh, great. Yes. Good, welcome. Welcome. I noticed since you weren't applauding, it was either you or you were upset. I assumed it was you.
Very good. All right, agenda item 10A, oral English proficiency in a report. The governing boards of Illinois public institutions are required by Public Act 84-1434 to take appropriate steps to ensure the oral English language proficiency of all individuals who provide classroom instruction. In order to comply with this statute, universities are expected to implement policies and practices that verify oral English language proficiency in the delivery of classroom instruction. It is further required by NIU Board of Trustees Regulations, Section 1F, that the university maintain a record of this compliance on behalf of the Board of Trustees. You can see in the rest of the information on this item that NIU has taken a series of steps to make certain that classroom instruction is not affected by lack of English proficiency, including communication of the procedure for any students to make official complaints. All academic departments are asked annually to document student complaints regarding English proficiency and the corrective actions that were taken to remedy the problem. All student complaints are investigated and prompt action is taken as appropriate. Of the 48 departments that were requested to provide information, no complaints were received. Any questions?
Is there any questions?
What was the difference? What was the change, I guess? It looks like you have zero complaints now.
We haven't had complaints in a long time.
In a long time. Okay. Great.
Can I just add, do students know how to make a complaint? Do we feel that that's well known?
I believe so.
As the former provost, I can attest that students know how to make a complaint.
Okay.
Very good. Proceed.
Agenda item 10B, faculty emeritus recognition. Northern Illinois University has created a regular process for the identification of retirees from whom the emeritus designation is appropriate. Emeritus is granted by the university to tenured ranked faculty members who retire from the university in good standing. Faculty who are granted emeritus status will retain their professorial rank and title at the time of retirement, followed by the designation emeritus. The most significant benefit that cannot be measured is the title that shows the faculty member has finished his or her distinguished career in good standing, continues to hold the professorial rank at the institution, and contribute to the university and their disciplines. A list of ranked faculty who have announced or finalized retirements during the fiscal year is prepared annually by Human Resource Services and reviewed by the Provost for presentation to the Board of Trustees. The university hereby informs the Board of Trustees of the retired faculty members designated as emeritus for fiscal year 20.
And we have those names. Are any of those emeriti here today? We certainly want to congratulate them. Next item.
And our final agenda item, 10C, will be a presentation from the Dean of College of Health and Human Sciences, Dr. Daryl Block.
Good morning. Thank you for the opportunity to present an update on the great work happening in the College of Health and Human Sciences. We serve over 2,100 undergraduates and over 500 graduate students with degree programs that include integrated experiential learning through practicums and clinical experiences. Our mission is to promote health and well-being through scholarship that integrates teaching, research, and service. We transform lives through active, engaged learning and hands-on research. Our vision is to be nationally recognized for quality and impact of research, teaching, and service. We produce graduates who are career or graduate school ready. Our faculty are involved in research to solve real-world problems, earning grants and awards, and creating more opportunities for our students to learn in exciting ways. Our programs are accredited by 12 outside agencies, and some accreditors accredit more than one program in the college. Having outside accreditors helps ensure that our programs maintain high levels of standards. In many disciplines, accreditation is necessary to recruit faculty and students, as well as for graduates to be licensed and employed. Our multiple programs are housed in 5 schools and a department. We have 21 degree programs. Additionally, many of our programs have tracks or specializations. For example, the Marriage and Family Therapy program is a specialization within the Human Development and Family Sciences Master's program. We've been working hard to develop and improve online programs, online degree programs, and online certificate programs that extend our offerings to working adults. NIU's Faculty Development and Instructional Design Center helps us make all our courses meet Quality Matters standards. On this slide, the bolded degree programs are those where we've partnered with NIU's online support team for program promotion. The college runs a number of enterprises that offer teaching learning experiences for students, as well as services for the NIU and larger community. Last year, we had over 4,600 visits at our clinics, the speech-language hearing clinic, the physical therapy clinic, and the couple and family therapy clinic. We have over 800 off-campus practicum sites in healthcare facilities, community and social service organizations, and businesses. We operate the Child Development and Family Center that provides child care and related services to the NIU and larger community. And we run Ellington's Restaurant in the Home Student Center. The Department of Military Science offers a minor in military science and is the academic home of the U.S. Army ROTC program. In the last year, ROTC has more than doubled its freshman enrollment. The Army has also doubled the number of faculty, and ROTC now has a recruiting officer dedicated to bring in quality prospective students to NIU. The School of Allied Health and Communicative Disorders exemplifies the college's commitment to engaged learning that benefits the community. For each school, we have the school listed and the programs listed on the left. The audiology faculty and students provide hearing health services at a local retirement home. They also work with local veteran service agencies to provide audiological care. The Doctor of Physical Therapy students perform free injury screenings at our NIU Recreation Center, as well as screenings for athletic teams at NIU and at community high schools. Our speech-language pathology faculty and students facilitate a music and memory program that provides personalized music and for passive listening for residents at a local long-term care facility. They also lead a choir for adults with cognitive communicative impairments, such as aphasia. Additionally, an interdisciplinary team offers a monthly autism caregiver group where students provide activities for children while caregivers receive information, resources, and support. Exciting things are happening in the School of Family and Consumer Sciences. As a result of program prioritization, two campus units offering childcare were merged to create the Child Development and Family Center. The energy created by this merger helped us receive both a five-year, $1.6 million IBHE Preschool for All grant to pay for full-day kindergarten services for at-risk children, and a $1 million U.S. Department of Education grant to fund child care costs for NIU students who are also parents. This grant supports NIU efforts to increase student retention. In the School of Health Studies, we've added an accelerated master's program in public health that allows students to earn both their Bachelor of Science and their Master of Public Health in as little as 5 years, saving time and money. One of the accelerated MPH students was featured at the recent Salute to Illinois Scholars event in Rockford, which aims to encourage top students to stay in Illinois for higher education. A year ago, a fifth organizational home, the School of Interdisciplinary Health Professions, was created. This school gives an academic home to our health science students and allows us to give more attention to pre-professional students as they plan to be admitted to undergraduate programs with secondary admission or to graduate programs. We began offering an accelerated BS to MS in rehabilitation counseling. This program allows high-achieving students to complete both degrees in 5 years, again, saving them time and expense. And to meet the growing demands and needs for addiction recovery, we've added a minor in addiction studies. We've also added a graduate certificate in health professions education and a master's degree in health sciences. Our PhD in health sciences is a hybrid program which attracts out-of-state students. Begun in 2015, it already has four alumni and 58 students. I want to thank the Board of Trustees for allowing us to have an innovative financial model for the PhD in health sciences program. Also, we very much appreciate the speed with which the board approves programs. Being able to start programs quickly allows us to be competitive in the marketplace. Nursing has been a hallmark of NIU for 60 years, reaching 9,000 alumni this year and earning a reputation for adding outstanding nurses to the regional and national workforce. Our School of Nursing was named one of the top three in the country for educating men in nursing. There are more than five qualified applicants for every seat in our pre-licensure bachelor's degree program, and the program is at capacity at this time. Our first-time pass rates for the NCLEX licensure exam for nurses are consistently above the national average, most recently 97%. We've made improvements to our RN to BS in nursing program. Through an Illinois Board of Higher Education grant, we are improving quality through faculty development, online program platform improvements, and integration of organized feedback from employers and feeder schools. All of our family nurse practitioner graduates have passed their certification tests this year, and we are on track for the first class of Doctor of Nursing Practice graduates next year. Our faculty are involved in important research and receive external recognition. For example, Professor King Chung received a Fulbright Award to continue humanitarian work in Brazil while also testing her iPad hearing test program. Professor Nancy Petches was named a 2019 Nurse Educator Fellow by the IBHE. She was instrumental in getting the IBHE grant for us to expand the RN to BS program. Professor Kim Wedoff launched her research on teletherapy for speech-language services for children under three. This unique approach to delivery is especially important in rural areas. Professor Melanie Dufferin joined NIU in 2018 and brought her Food Master program and its $930,000 NIH Science Education Partnership Award. Food Master is a program that uses food to teach math and science skills. Professor Catherine Mazurek has $2.8 million of contracts with the Illinois Department of Public Health in collaboration with the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention for data collection for the Behavioral Risk Factor Surveillance System. That program gathers information through telephone surveys regarding health risk behaviors, chronic health conditions, and the use of preventive services. The college's new survey research laboratory collects the data for this survey. Dr. Mazurek also has a $1.5 million subcontract funded by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services to give technical assistance to Illinois clinicians to navigate Medicare's quality payment program for Medicare reimbursement. The college does face some challenges. There are some severe facility limitations in some of our programs. Additionally, a number of health disciplines have increased educational requirements over the past years, and the faculty to teach in those programs is extremely limited nationwide. Because of acute competition, our faculty searches often take a long time, and faculty are sometimes recruited away by other institutions. Student recruitment for our degree completion programs is a challenge. At this time, we have 50 articulation agreements and transfer pathways with community colleges. And we've developed a dual enrollment with one community college for one program. But like many universities, we have not yet found the most productive way to recruit community college graduates and working adults. The health and human sciences fields desperately need graduates who are members of underrepresented groups. There is also a great need for bilingual graduates. NIU can help fill those societal needs, and at this time, 50% of our students identify as members of underrepresented groups. We will continue to develop and deliver high-quality health and human sciences programs. We hope in the future to develop a major in gerontology aging services. We've stepped our toes into this by already having a minor in gerontology and a graduate specialization in leadership and aging studies as part of our Master of Science in Applied Human Development and Family Sciences program. Our first full-time faculty member in this area will be starting in January. Reorganization and development of the BS in Health Sciences has led students who are in pre-nursing and pre-medical lab science and other pre-professional programs to graduate with a useful degree, even if they don't get into their preferred major. We plan to redouble our retention efforts in this area and throughout the college. We also plan to continue to attract, support, and retain research-active faculty through startup support with the help of the Division of Research and Innovation Partnerships, promotion of interdisciplinary research collaboration, faculty writing groups, and participation in NIU's Principal Investigator Academy. The Illinois General Assembly's 2020 budget included funding for construction of a new Health Informatics and Technology Center. The new facility will allow for greater collaboration among our programs, and our programs are currently dispersed across 7 buildings on campus and in DeKalb Sycamore, actually. Having a better simulation lab would allow us to substitute a portion of our clinical experiences with simulation experiences. It would also be useful for collaboration with other colleges, especially the College of Engineering and Engineering Technology's Biomedical Engineering program. We are excited to learn more plans for this building. In summary, the College of Health and Human Sciences has high-quality programs that integrate engaged learning with science in the service of society. Thank you for the opportunity to share information about our college.
Certainly is a very inclusive presentation that shows the extent of your college. You mentioned that a lot of practicums and learning outside of the classroom. What difficulty are you having in finding these kinds of sites?
There's great. We have, with over 800 affiliation agreements, we have a lot of these sites on paper. Some of them might take 6 students, 4 students, 3 students. There's a huge amount of competition for all of these sites. And the agreement, you need a legal agreement first, which we have that down pat, but the agreement to take 8 students instead of 6 or 10 students instead of 8 is always at the local level with local managers. So there is a lot of relational work that takes place to get this, and a lot of competition from other programs, including nationwide programs that have online, programs that are online and might, have some students in Illinois.
Other questions?
I was just wondering, first of all, I want to compliment you on the programs and the quality of them. You know, with the healthcare, there are so many different programs that you have to offer as things keep changing. How do you provide the resources for all those programs, and how do you make sure that those are the ones that the students are most attracted to? It seems like, and I don't know if there's any other way you could do it, that you have so many options and so many programs. Is it hard to concentrate on so many at once? Is that absolutely necessary to attract students?
We have a great team. We have very loyal faculty and staff, and we get some help with our director of communications and with marketing by the university. With that, it's a struggle. I'll give you an example. There is a huge demand for occupational therapy nationwide. Aging population, a huge demand for that. It's an expensive program. We are not touching it with a 10-foot pole because we would need a huge amount of resources to start another clinical program. So we look at the demand, the societal demand, and the student demand. We look at what our competitors are doing. Some things we say that would be great, but we can't afford it. We make changes to our programs to try to make them better, but it's a wide array of programs that we have.
Thank you. Just for context, one great presentation, and it was great to see how many recognitions you and your team has gotten for the great work that you're doing. But just for context for me, how big is this college, like in terms of faculty and students?
Well, we have 2,100 undergrads, 5 undergrads at this point in time. We have, I'm thinking, about 70 faculty members. They come and go very quickly sometimes. 70 faculty members and about 60 instructors. We have a lot of loyal instructors that are long-term, full-time employees.
Mm-hmm. This is one of our larger colleges, then. Is that right?
Excuse me, what was your question?
This is one of our larger colleges. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then the other question, I'm just curious. So everything seems to make a lot of sense under Health and Human Sciences, and then there's the hospitality and tourism and then fashion merchandise. Mm-hmm. Can you explain that a little bit?
Well, hospitality programs are located nationwide in a variety of colleges. Sometimes there's a freestanding college of hospitality. Sometimes they're in colleges of human services. Sometimes they're in a college of business, and sometimes they're in colleges of health or health-related. In our situation, hospitality and also fashion merchandising are located in our college because of the legacy of home economics education, which was a very, very large program early on in NIU's history. And later on, home economics education has kind of our local schools are not really hiring many home economics educators anymore, along with shop, and they've kind of changed their curricula. So therefore, what we've done, we've branched off, and we have now nutrition, dietetics, human development and family science. We have things that were part of that, and hospitality and fashion merchandising were part of that. So I would say it's a legacy issue.
Questions?
I got a piggyback question. So you talk about 2,100 undergrad, 500 graduate. You mentioned on one of the flips that you have a space problem. Mm-hmm. How are you addressing that? And can you give us some idea what the future may look like as it concerns spatial issues?
How are we addressing it? I think this upcoming building might help to some extent. We sometimes move areas from one area to another.
Geographically, are you near each other?
No. And that's really our geographic dispersion is an issue because our many accredited programs and just common sense says that in the health and human sciences, you should have interdisciplinary learning and interdisciplinary collaboration. If you think about, hospital problems in hospitals, accidents in hospitals that occur, it's often the handoff from one discipline to another. And there's like a whole movement that people should be educated together and they should be educated in an interdisciplinary way. And it's a little bit difficult to do that when our programs are dispersed. We do things, we have interdisciplinary lunch and learns for students. We have, we like touch on that, we make it work. But if we had more of our programs together geographically, it would be good and would also be good for our accreditations.
I'll just add to that the geographic dispersion of the programs in the College of Health and Human Sciences and the quality of the facilities that some of those programs have been in because of a deferred maintenance backlog is really a tragedy for the university and for our students. And we are very hopeful that the building that we've been waiting for 20 years on the Capital Development Board list will help unite those programs, but also help us to realize the opportunity for more interdisciplinary collaboration, not only across the programs within the College of Health and Human Sciences, but across that college and others. Dean Block has mentioned the opportunity to collaborate more effectively with biomedical engineering. Really, every college has an opportunity with the potential for a simulation lab, with the potential for actors as patients, with the potential for kinesiology and anatomy programs that reside in other colleges to try to come together. And so planning what this looks like and how we might realize those opportunities is going to be a big effort going forward, and one that's very long overdue. I do also want to say that the dean has not been waiting for this building without trying to make effective collaborations, public-private partnerships, looking at simulation labs, other places, not only thinking about philanthropy, but thinking about hospital partnerships. But sometimes a simulation lab in a hospital is set up to handle one set of situations and address one cohort of employees with one set of needs. And it's not that easy to shoehorn in students who are in training. And so there are no easy answers to what's been a vexing problem. We're probably more optimistic now than we've been in quite a while because of the capital appropriation.
You mentioned that the ROTC has doubled in size in the last year, correct?
With counting this incoming class, yes.
Okay. How racially dispersed are the incoming and the current people members going to be? And I guess a better question would be, is the faculty racially representative of the incoming and current students that are involved in that program?
So first, yes, it's a very diverse student body and a very diverse faculty. I also want to comment that the faculty, except for one administrative support person, all of the faculty is paid for by the Army. They're not paid for by us. There is a lot of diversity in the faculty and in our student body. One of the reasons why the Army made a dedicated recruitment officer for the program is because of our great diversity and because of our nearness to Chicago. So they see that we're a really good program and that we have room to grow, and it's a win-win for NIU to be involved.
Thank you.
Other questions?
I have one last question. You talked about the challenges, and I'm wondering about one of the greatest opportunities that you see. You have a lot of programs, and there's a lot of demand for these types of programs and careers. What would you say you have a lot of capacity, extra capacity, right? Potentially, maybe there's not a whole lot of extra capacity, but that, and where there's a lot of demand, but you're just like, why aren't the students coming, right? That you might need extra support and recruitment for.
Well, I think the demand, a lot of the demand is for clinical programs that are very expensive. So it is hard to grow clinically intense programs without a great infusion of money. That's the first thing. So what we've been trying to do, especially with some budget issues that in the past years, is to grow programs that are less clinically intensive. So our Bachelor of Science in Health Sciences, and now the plan for gerontology are those examples. There is room for expansion of clinically intensive programs, and I'll give nursing as an example, but. And there are some, we have some plans to inch up our numbers of applicants in that program because of an agreement with a local healthcare institution that has agreed to take more of our students. But the big thing for being able to expand that would be to have a really top-notch simulation lab. And we do have a simulation lab. It's a simulation lab that lets us keep our accreditation, and we put out good, we educate good students. And but to have a really top-notch simulation lab that would allow us to substitute some of our clinical experiences where it's so competitive to get placements with simulation experiences, and then we could slow, and then we could also increase our numbers. Mm-hmm. That's like an example. I don't know.
Do you know, or do you have the numbers on for the nursing school, how many people apply and how many you're able to accept?
We have 5 qualified applications for each slot, and we accept now 80 twice a year. So each, and we start, and that program starts second semester. It's a secondary admission that starts second semester sophomore year. So starting second semester sophomore year, and we're accepting 80 twice a year. Some people start in fall, some people start in spring, and that was a way we did that twice a year to maximize the number of students that we could have and maximize the resources that we have access to.
Just one last very quick comment. I would encourage all of the board members, if you haven't, to at some point in time see the School of Nursing or see the building that the nursing school is in. It's a former grade or middle school, I believe, up in the Annie Glidden North area, but the reputation, as you mentioned, of our nursing program is boundless. I mean, it's a great reputation. Several members of my family are graduates of that program, and despite the limited facilities that we have, the energy in that building is just amazing, and just amazing students. And also, I would encourage you to go see I call it the Speech and Hearing Clinic up on Sycamore Road. I'm sure there's a much more formal name to it, but it's a beautiful facility. It's the former Monsanto building, which was DeKalb Ag, that the university purchased some years ago. But at the time that I went to visit it, we were serving the community members there. I'm assuming we're still doing that. Which is terrific, and that too is it's a great thing for you to see. So at some point in time, that's convenient for the college and yourself, I would encourage you to go over and see those facilities and to meet the students and the faculty and so forth.
We're happy to do that. We welcome visits.
It's terrific.
Yeah, we have. If you go around to the health and human science types of agencies, hospitals, people speak so well of our graduates. Our graduates in nursing, but also our graduates in nutrition dietetics. All of our programs, our family social services. In all of our programs, wherever you go, they say, "Oh my gosh, we love to take your graduates," or "These 5 people are from your program. We're graduates from your program."
What can we be doing to help you? I mean, as trustees, what can we do to help you, Dean Block? And if you don't have a ready answer to that question, we'll take one at a future meeting. But I would say this to all of the deans: help us to understand. Clearly, Dr. Freeman does a very good job of this on your behalf on a continual basis, but it's always great to hear directly from you as well when you get these opportunities. What do you need from us, and what can we be doing for you? So I
think when we have these innovations to try, to allow us to go forth with the curricular changes, and if we think of other things, maybe I'll let you know.
Great. Well, thank you.
Thank you very much.
Mr. Committee Chair, that concludes our university report.
Very good. Is there any other matters to be brought before the board? Hearing none, our next meeting will be November 14th of this year. May I have a motion to adjourn?
Bob, can I mention one thing? We've got FACFO. We're going to take a 5-minute break, and then we'll start at about 10:08.
So moved.
Is there a second?
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Committee is adjourned.